Jim Murphy of AMR Research, and Darren Gornacho of Sitecore. Jim Murphy brings hands-on experience in enterprise content management and collaboration to his current position as Research Director, Web and Cloud Technologies. Jim advises Gartner's clients on portals, content management, collaboration, and knowledge management strategies. Jim also works with software vendors on marketing and product strategies and tracks trends to assess the competitive landscape. Darren Gornacho is a broad technologist with a deep understanding of the web from multiple perspectives. He has been the director of technology for a large financial company. He has run e-commerce operations for a large regional consulting organization. He has also served in senior product marketing positions for web software companies. Darren is VP of product marketing for Sitecore, a leading web content management software company. Welcome, Jim. Welcome, Darren.
Thank you, Serafina. This is Jim Murphy, and I'm, as was stated, going to discuss a balanced kind of four-part approach to delivering business impact on the web. And we're talking about the evolving web. The premise here is that, The premise here is that, in case you haven't noticed, the nature of the web has changed drastically in the past dozen or so years, and that's in terms of technology, certainly, but really more significantly in terms of the social use of the web. Many content management systems and approaches and strategies devised by companies were designed and built at a time when the web was much different than it is today. And now we're at a point where the web is likely to change at a faster rate, and in many cases, in a less predictable ways. So how do you devise a web strategy that meets new needs and anticipates ongoing changes? So I wanted to say a bit about AMR research, and in case you haven't noticed, there was a discrepancy in the way Serafina introduced me and what was said on the slide. I now work for Gartner Research as AMR has been acquired by Gartner a few months ago, and we're still being sort of incorporated into the business. There's really two reasons for me to show you this slide here, which is a screenshot of the still existing AMR Research website. One is to introduce myself, and AMR Research was founded in 1986 as a company that advised companies in commercial enterprises, particularly consumer products companies, life sciences companies, manufacturers, and retailers on their IT strategies. My role with AMR was very broad around the whole space of content management, web content management, document management, portals, collaboration, more and more lately Web 2.0 and Enterprise 2.0 types of strategies. So I was very much a generalist there. Of course, a company like AMR has to treat the website as not just a marketing mechanism, not just a sort of facade to the customer that promotes our products, but actually it delivers our products as well. So we're delivering advice, we're engaging customers on this channel. That's what the constant and continual effort has been with a company like AMR. And it also happens to be the case with Gartner. And I'll show you a little bit later on as we close out this presentation some of the things that Gartner is doing to improve its customer engagement on the web. In terms of my role at Gartner, after years of getting away with not declaring a major, I could cover whatever I wanted to. Now I have dozens of colleagues that cover content management and search and portals and high-performance workplace and everything. And it's great because I've got all these colleagues to share research with and share ideas. And I have an opportunity to concentrate more fully on the space of, and my space will be really portals and web technologies, basically. So this first slide, as we move on to the presentation, is a little conceit that I wrote a couple of years ago, really, comparing the web to a teenager. Maybe it's, you could say quite literally it's a teenager, in terms of the years that it's been around or that the years that companies have employed the web proper, to do business jobs for them. But there's also there remains an identity crisis for companies in terms of how to use it because it's changed so drastically, as I mentioned before. So the conceit includes things that, you know, it's socially aware and self-conscious. It has reckless disregard for security and propriety and all of those things. It's sexual and it's social and all of those fun things that were going on. So we're seeing it causes ADD and it's the result of ADD and all of those types of things. So how do we sort of wrap our arms around this thing? The web is in a kind of identity crisis and companies have to work it out. So these are the four strategies that I mentioned before, and I should say four. They're based on four streams of change. As we look at the way that the web has changed in many different aspects, I've sort of narrowed it down to four. And strategic might be a sort of redundancy in saying these are four web strategies, but that is it's certainly that the web has to be treated as a more strategic asset, and not just the website, but the web in terms of the way that you're engaging customers, as the way that it can be used to pursue real top-level business initiatives and strategies. It's not just another publishing mechanism like we saw years ago or like a lot of people. Or it's not even just another sales channel. It could be the main channel. So the pervasive part, and I'll go into more detail about all these things as we move along. I'll give some examples of what I mean. Pervasive is we're talking about more than the web now. It's more than your website. Your web presence is certainly more than that. We're talking about things like new devices, and the fact that people don't necessarily go to your website to get information about you. They use other aspects of the web. Engaging, we're seeing that the web is for everyone and by everyone, and that means that companies in many cases have had to cede some control to the consumers. The consumers now own the web, and that has some real impacts on the way you approach it. And responsive, you know, if the web is more strategic and it's more engaging and it's more pervasive, the web and your web presence, you also have to be more responsive to what's going on the web. So it becomes a hub for shaping, sensing, and responding to customer demand. Okay, a little more detail on the strategic aspect. What I'm doing here is calling out a couple of challenges in each case and bringing up some of the primary functional requirements that I would look for in a web platform to address these issues. I'm not trying to be exhaustive and give you a complete list of all the features and functions of a web content management system, for instance, but I'm looking at what has changed and what do we need now that we might not have had before, and these are just highlights. So web content management, as I said before, isn't just about building and managing a website anymore. It's about engaging customers and collaborating more efficiently with partners. It's not just another channel through which to publish information or conduct business. It's the network that ties all the information channels and people together. And what I mean is that if you look at the concept of multi-channel, that the web is the one channel with some potential to tie everything together. All those kind of traditional analog channels aren't built with technology that would allow you to tie things together. So the web is built with integration in mind. So when we say strategic, we mean using the web to accomplish real top-level business strategies like aligning, like promoting the brand, satisfying customers, speeding time to market, addressing new markets, globalizing the business, merging with other companies, as is the case with AMR and Gartner right now, presenting a single face to the customer and going to market that way. Those are real strategic things, and they're top of mind for your CEOs. Functional requirements. You start to look at needs around multi-site content management, around globalization and localization. Always, high performance and reliability is a fundamental need for these things. If it's going to be global, if it's going to be strategic, it's got to be high performance and it's got to be on 100% of the time. Integration is also vitally important, especially when it comes to being able to employ existing enterprise systems that are maybe back end. This is a glimpse of some data, basically, and there's a lot to support the idea that the web is becoming more strategic in many different industries. This is just looking at a slice of the retail market, and the slice is basically multi-channel retail companies, and it shows a steady growth of revenue attributable to the web for companies that sell both on the web and through traditional channels. So it's steadily increasing over time. And retail, by the way, is only part of the picture. In fact, if you looked at B2B, the B2B industry, business-to-business industry, the reliance on the web for revenue is actually significantly higher than it is in B2C. And this comes from data according to the U.S. Census Bureau. E-commerce, for instance, accounts for about 35% of total shipments in the manufacturing sector, which is up about almost 6% from the prior year and up substantially for six straight years. Actually, it's at the seventh straight year. If you look at retail revenue overall, e-commerce still accounts for only about 3.6% of revenue there as of the second quarter of 2009, but that's increased at a rate of 18.4% over previous years. So it continues to grow as a strategic channel in multiple industries. And here's an example from a company who understood the strategic aspect of the web early, Avaya. As it spun off from Lucent Technologies way back in 2000, Avaya inherited more than 880 websites and dozens of technology platforms to support them. They had about 500 different content creators and agencies creating divergent branding and messaging and product information. They suffered severely from poor time to market. It sometimes took up to 2 months to publish critical information because they had to coordinate all the channels in a manual way. So what they did is they developed a customer experience management strategy. They just didn't look at website management or web content management. They looked overall at the customer experience. And in this, they turned almost 900 different websites into a coordinated whole with the goal to ensure unified content distribution and customer interaction across channels, really. As a result of their efforts, they gained about 20% in unique visitors to their site. Customer satisfaction overall went from about almost 60% to almost 80%, and they reduced their internal publishing cost by about 90% and their external publishing cost by about 75%. So there was real cost savings here in the course of pursuing a business strategy based on unifying their web presence. The next step is pervasive, and this is what we mean. This comes in understanding that your web presence is more, like I said, it's more than your website. The content that you produce proliferates throughout the web. You might not be completely in control if you're distributing content through partners, if you're invoking content from other people. So it's not just your website. Controlling brand and image through these many channels has become extremely hard, and participating, developing a presence in the social web where people sit is another factor here. Functional requirements that we start to look at, content aggregation and syndication capabilities. This is another aspect of improved integration through services-oriented architecture or web-oriented architectures, gadgets, mashups, other APIs and things like that, where we have to interoperate with other web presences. One of the hot topics in the industry right now, of course, is mobility, mobile devices, multi-device support, multimedia support, rich content enablement, and a huge factor in recent years has been search and site optimization, really, as I'll show on this next slide here. So how are customers getting to your website? Very often this way, and this was just a simple search for Washington Post, and you can imagine what this has done to the newspaper industry to a large extent, that people have availability of content relatively for free. And even if you type Washington Post in here, Google provides the navigation into that site if you want it that way. So companies have to adjust in drastic ways to the fact that people don't necessarily go through their homepage to get to the information, and that has a huge impact on your understanding of what customers want, which we'll talk about a good deal later. An example of a company that that was really forced to face these issues about the pervasive web is Unilever. And this screenshot actually comes from Unilever. It's a recent shot of them. They're a global consumer products company. I'm sure you know them. They own about 150 different brands and over 240,000 employees. Knorr, Bird's Eye, Flora, Lipton, Lux, Dove are among the brands that they own. They actually used the occasion of changing their logo, which you see up in the left corner in the upper left corner of the page, to unify also their branding and unify their web properties across brands and globally. So what was happening is that they had to distribute this new logo and the new marketing material through numerous third parties, channel partners and agencies, retailers, and it pertained to content types, the web, print materials, packaging. So it was everything. It wasn't just web information that they were passing around. It was information that needed to appear in print advertising and all of those things as well. So they saved an enormous cost and time in using a content system, both to present their new brand on the web and to distribute it to a wider range of channel partners, retailers, and agencies. The next step is engaging. This is what we mean. How do you really engage customers? How do you convert prospects to buyers? How do you increase their loyalty through the web? Functional requirements at a high level start to include collaborative and community capabilities. I'm sure you've heard about wikis and blogs and forums and all the Enterprise 2.0 types of capabilities. We're also a great deal looking at more advanced forms of personalization and what's being called context-aware computing or context awareness. And that involves being able to identify where a person is. Location awareness is one aspect of context awareness, and it pertains very strongly to the mobile market that we were talking about before. Improve user experience for consumers, but also consider improve user experience for all the people that participate within the business on the web. And that's been a huge factor in web content management systems and making sure that they work. It's not just an IT tool anymore. It has to be able to serve the various business people and designers that that operate on a day-to-day basis. In terms of engaging customers, Del Monte is an interesting story. This is the current homepage. They're trying to get customers to connect to their brand, and to do so, they're not just providing information about their canned pineapples, for example. They're providing information that's useful to consumers whether they buy the brand or not. So they're engaging customers in a way that gets them to interact. Next page. And they create a conversation with a customer rather than a one-way broadcast of information. That's really important. We'll also talk a bit about that. You engage a customer in conversation so you can get a sense of what the customer wants. And that's that's been a hard thing to get to for companies. This happens to be a screenshot of an interface for Sitecore, which I'm sure we'll hear about a good deal later. But this is that issue about we have to be usable and approachable to a business audience that is not just an IT audience that's managing a website. The last piece is responsive. If we're going to generate all this activity on the web and all this customer engagement on the web, and if it's become more strategic to the business, we have to use it as a hub for sensing and responding to customer demand. The challenge is, how do we understand and anticipate customer need? How do we identify and address their problems? Functional requirements include integrated personalization, customer segmentation, content targeting, testing and optimization, advanced analytics. I won't read through them all, but think about the ways that you can both sense what's going on the web, and I think these are done in sort of data-centric ways where you're doing analysis of hits to your website and clickstream analysis and all those fun things, as well as more qualitative means of being able to understand what customers want. It's not all technology. A lot of it involves actually participating in these communities and feeling out what customers want. A great example here is Red Bull, and I've actually taken a few different screenshots of their presence on Facebook. It pertains to really all of the characteristics I've talked about before. You're talking about engaging customers actually where they sit. They're actually going to the environment where their target customers are. They create an attractive and unique community with a number of applications, including a Twitter feed from, you'll see a Twitter feed here from Red Bull athletes. They have games such as the Procrastination Station on the right, and a lot of other things like, I pulled the screenshot of Drunkish Dials, which is quite funny if you want to go visit their site. But that type of, they're creating these types of conversations, which are really interesting and engaging. So it's not just feeling out the participation on your own website and how it's going or optimizing the site for better performance, but also optimizing your web presence overall. And it's also, the other point is, it's not always about numbers and data gathering and things like that. Sometimes it's very qualitative. You engage customers and you actually read their interactions with you. Okay, so some things about the market in general, and about the I think what I've implied here is that there's not necessarily, in terms of technology, one specific approach that's going to solve all of these needs. That we're seeing the bringing together of a lot of different technologies and concepts together, and this is how I typically draw a framework of the different types of capabilities. Content management, you have, that's ensuring quality and integrity of data. Search, you have on the other end, I'm providing a richer experience or a richer navigation through search capabilities, and those are examples. Portals, I'm providing a single unified point of access, collaboration, and allowing people to work together toward common goals. And then you've got all these additions that you, and Sitecore will talk, I'm sure, a great deal about how they've started to invoke some of these and accommodate some of these other approaches to being able to engage customers more thoroughly on the web. In terms of the overall IT market, I'm sure in the past several years, you will have noted, as we've had some economic hard times, that there's been consolidation in the market, and drastic consolidation. And it often seems like, well, a few big players are going to buy everybody up, but that doesn't happen to be true in this market at all. In fact, we're seeing a kind of explosion of new ideas, an explosion of alternate approaches to the market, a lot of up-and-comers in the market that are gaining a great deal of traction. Sitecore, I would include in that group in a big way. This is just a shot of the platform. You know, if you're looking at, I want to create a balanced approach to be able to sense and respond to the evolving web. It's not something that's necessarily static. You want to think in terms of not just addressing the issues as they exist today, but building something that can help you adapt to the issues that are next to come, which no one can really predict. I'm closing here with another shot of Gartner's site, and you'll see here it's changing. They just introduced what they're calling, and you'll see on the right side here, the Gartner Business Wizard, which is an effort to understand better and to address more specific needs on behalf of customers based on their role and based on their industry and based on, as well as the point in the decision, the IT decision life cycle that where they're engaging us. Sometimes it's strategy, sometimes it's a best practices discussion, sometimes it's a system selection discussion. So it really gets to the heart of what these customers what customers want to do, and delivers research in a proactive way, allows us to engage our both to engage them not just through delivering content, but by engage having our client customer research and client research people engage the customers, the salespeople engage the customers more directly, and it allows us to anticipate and to gather up all this information and to use it to drive the research agenda going forward. So we're really looking forward to this. It's just been introduced, and I'd encourage you to go visit it. And that is what I have today. I'm going to pass it to Darren now.
Thanks, Jim. And let me just switch over here to my presentation. And one of the things I'd like to really just continue the conversation as I flip over to my next screen, just one more second, is just really to echo what Jim has said first. When Jim originally started his research, I was pretty excited because I think in a lot of ways what Jim is talking about is something that Sitecore has been really focused on for quite some time. And so this idea of thinking of the web in a more holistic way, and instead of just thinking about it as web publishing, is something that's been near and dear to Sitecore's heart for quite some time. So there we go. Okay, so the idea behind this is that I want to, where Jim's going to talk about the more strategic, you know, four elements, I'm going to talk about how that's really reflecting in the marketplace today and what you're seeing in some of the vendors such as Sitecore, and how is this stuff starting to manifest to give you an idea of where this is all going. Just a quick word about Sitecore for those of you who have never run into us in the market. We're a web content management provider focused on the .NET platform. Been around since 99 and over 1,800 clients with over 22,000 websites in production. And Gartner has written exhaustively about us. You can check out you know, where we are in the Magic Quadrant and all those good things. And so I say this because I want to back up some of the credibility behind our statements. You know, we're working with a lot of these big name brands, like Jim has talked about. You know, Sara Lee is an example. Large multi-site presences. So some of the bigger brands around the world, as well as some of the more mid-sized brands as well. And I think this gives us a lot of perspective. And this is what we're seeing in talking to these customers and seeing very much similar things. And it comes down to this. You know, this, if you think about how you use the website strategically, let's just talk about, you know, the strategy for a moment. You know, customers are starting to really figure out, how do I get greater return from my website? Instead of just throwing up pages, instead of just putting up content, they're really starting to step back and go, what can I do to improve the business benefits out of my website? And this is the kind of maturity model that they tend to think about. As you go up the stack, going from just simple web publishing and even web traffic analysis, you know, analytics, how many page counts did I get, to really starting to understand what customers are doing and who they are. This is that idea of being responsive and understanding the customer, starting to engage them across multiple touch points and start to understand how you're converting them and what kind of campaigns they're interacting with, and starting to move outside of that into, you know, where they touch you in the sales process. And again, this idea of being pervasive across channels and then starting to optimize and be engaging and to be responsive to them and start to segment them and ultimately start to interact with them at an individual level with things like real-time personalization. The idea to really target them and be very responsive to them is really important. And this is, you know, as you get up through that stack, this is where the greatest business benefits come from that really start to talk to you or deliver on what Jim has been talking about. So let's talk about some of the examples. So first of all, let's talk about how you become responsive. Well, there's a great line that one of the analysts I was talking to the other day said. He said, you cannot persuade your customers until you perceive your customers. Another way to say it is, you know, Stephen Covey says it best. You know, seek first to understand, then to be understood. You're trying to persuade your customers online. You really need to understand who they are. So let's talk about modern technologies now have embedded analytics, and WCMs are starting to embed these analytics packages where you can start to really profile your visitors so you understand who they are based on the kinds of things they're doing on your website. And you get controls much like this where you can start to sense and understand those customers. Now, of course, you want to start to interact with them. So maybe you put up a campaign to them, and you launch that campaign out there on the web. Let's say you're driving them to a webinar much like the one we're on today. And once they come back to your website, because much of this stuff starts to drive them back to your website, you start to interact with that visitor. So you know they came on this campaign. They've come to a landing page. Perhaps they filled it out and gave you some information. And as you're starting to understand who they are, and they start to spend up more time on your web page, let's say they start looking at the market scope or the Magic Quadrant, and then they start looking at other pages on your website, Every step of the way, you're learning about them. You're starting to sense and understand them. And ultimately, you can figure out not only what content they look at, but what things they do, like searching for words like pricing, start to really help you understand maybe where they are in the buying process. Maybe you understand, you know, what kind of person they are. In this case, then we think that they're an executive and they're likely in IT. The idea that you can sense them is really becoming very important, and that really speaks to Jim's idea of, you know, the ability to be responsive. But on top of that, you first you sense, and then you adapt, or maybe you persuade. And in this example here, let's say we have another person that comes to our website, and we figure out that based on some of the content they're looking at, that they're particularly concerned around these kind of issues. This is very much a B2B concept, but you want to start to understand what are their business challenges, what are their business concerns, and in this case, it's some project risk and maybe some training issues. So as you start to understand them and maybe even throw a poll out and get engage them socially, and you understand what might be concerning them, they're also perhaps worried about cost, you can start to adapt and overcome. And this is that idea of personalization, being able to offer things that overcome those objections. You can adapt to that customer and start to help them overcome perhaps some of that fear, maybe use case studies, maybe use white papers to help them understand how you can overcome some of those issues and nurture them through those concerns. That's very much this idea of adapting in that person, in that responsive methodology that Jim talked about. So I think beyond just the simple publishing content, it's really using that content to its best advantage and helping them overcome and adapt to what their particular needs are. Because as you mentioned, more and more customers are coming to us late in the game. They've already done a lot of research off your site. Now they're coming on your site, and you have a very limited window to influence them. And you can't really influence them unless you really understand them. So then the next concept here is this idea of really engaging the website. And this idea of engagement really comes down to one really important point, and that is when you really want to engage them and take them to the next step, often they see something like this. Fill out a form, you know, a demo request, you know, a request for information, maybe an appointment. This is where the rubber meets the road in a lot of cases. But oftentimes, companies fail to really capitalize on this moment. So let's take this web form here. And let's say you want to build that web form out. You want to actually customize it and be adaptive. But what you really want to be able to do is connect this person to the rest of your organization. And so you can see here, this is just an example of our web forms tool. But what this web forms tool in our case lets you do is actually create records in the CRM. And what happens is as you start to create these records in the CRM and start mapping these fields to the fields in your CRM system, you start to get some connectivity so that now I can start to see what my visitors are doing and map that to a real-world person where my salespeople can actually interact with. And so as they start to talk to these people in the real world, you can start to actually understand who they are, and all of a sudden now these same records are showing up in the CRM system, and I'm just going to hop through this to the next step. You can start to understand, well, what did they do on that form? What did they look at? Was it a success? Was it a failure? Did they drop out and abandon that form? You can start to really optimize their experience and find that if everyone's abandoning on a couple of different stops, maybe you've got an issue with your form. Maybe you need to polish that form. You can also understand what they didn't fill out, what kind of errors they've got, and you can start to really improve the usability of your forms themselves. But on top of that, you can actually start to bridge the worlds online and offline. So I can also see in my CRM system, in this case, we can see that I've got, I'm in a CRM system and I'm looking at the actual values that that person submitted to me on the web. So now I can start to track, what did they actually do when they came to my website? I can actually tie that record in my CRM back to all the things they were doing on my website. So this is that idea of really engaging them and connecting. It's a little bit of pervasive as well in the fact that I'm starting to bridge my online world with my offline world. I'm starting to connect that visitor as they came to me on my website, and I can start to see every single thing they did on my website against their record within my CRM system. And that idea of, as Jim mentioned, tying this multi-channel strategy and that customer engagement strategy that he mentioned is a very important point. It's time to think beyond just a web page, and it's time to think beyond just the website and start to think about this multi-channel engagement strategy that you can have, and you can absolutely start to connect the visitor's experiences online with their visitor experience throughout the sales process, maybe in the call center, you know, wherever they're touching you, maybe even in the brick and mortar, maybe the fact that you can actually tie back to that and recommend things in the actual store itself on a mobile phone based on geography and proximity is another relevant example of this, to start to bridge that gap and create that holistic, pervasive, you know, multi-channel touch. Another good example here is email engagement. The ability to touch that person based on their web experiences and then coordinate that email interaction with them. So in this case, building out, you know, and editing an email here, creating some values, personalizing that based on the content you've collected and the knowledge you've built about them on the website, and continuing the conversation into the email process so that now I can send out those emails to these people and understand what are they reacting to, what messages are they keying into, which ones are they ignoring, and start to do nurture marketing that's tied into the actual personalization and profiling that you've got on your website to start to use the knowledge gained on that website, that ability to what you've sensed and learned about them, what you perceive with them on the website can inform the way that you interact with them offline and in the emails. This idea of tying that closed-loop marketing message together is a hugely important idea. So the bottom line here is that you really want to think about this holistic strategy. And I'll bring up this slide here that talks about this ideal e-business solution. In a perfect world, we would love to integrate our WCM with the ability to tie that tightly in the community, have analytics automatically tied into that, have, you know, A-B split testing and multivariate testing, lead scoring and lead tracking, campaign management, CRM, email marketing, and search analytics. And what we believe, Sitecore believes, and I think we echo where Jim is saying that the market is going, is you're going to see platforms now that start to bring all those pieces into a single cohesive application or platform. And in this case, what we've done is we've created our web content management system coupled with our online marketing suite and then bolted that into the CRM systems, Salesforce, Microsoft Dynamics, et cetera, so that you have a holistic customer engagement platform that allows you to understand your customers across all the channels and start to interact with them. So just as a quick summary, we think that, you know, convergence is driving a very exciting time in this market. Innovation is growing in leaps and bounds. We're seeing lots of new innovation pull from new entrants to the market as well as existing, you know, vendors. We think web content management technologies are one of the best places to weave these together because, as Jim mentioned, they were architected for integration. And I think that's really important here. To really bring a lot of these pieces together is going to be a very integration-centric way. And this is where customers are going. When you think about your campaigns, you're driving them to your website. Even radio spots are driving them back to your website. So this idea of connecting your visitors across all your channels, your sales channels, your call centers, in the store, on mobile devices, all those things are crucial to think about that visitor experience across all those channels. But start incrementally. Don't try and boil the ocean. Start to think about that holistic strategy and start to incrementally improve that, but start to grow the business value of your website, not just publishing web pages. And with that, I think we'll hand it over to Serafina for some questions and answers.
Thank you, Darren. We have some great questions today, and I'd like to encourage you all to continue to submit questions either using the webinar toolbar or via Twitter at hashtag BeyondWCM throughout this session. If your question is not answered, we will follow up with you on an individual basis. The first question we have here is, do these recommendations apply to B2B companies?
I'll take it first, and then I'll hand it over to Jim. Absolutely. In fact, I think Jim mentioned at one point that B2B is actually even more relevant than B2C. I think B2C has a lot of impact here, particularly in the retail spaces, but even in lots of other markets where customer interaction is very crucial. B2B probably is even more powerful in that. Jim?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at the stats, and the web is in many ways more vital to B2B than it is to B2C so far. The formulas might be different in terms of how they, you know, and I think the strategy that I talk about, strategic, pervasive, engaging, and responsive, might take a different form and a different emphasis in some aspects of it. But essentially, it's the same. The other thing I'd say is that it's not just a B2B customer. It's B2B, and it typically is going to be partner, but a great deal of my work with customers has been on the supplier side, which is really interesting because companies are starting to treat their suppliers sort of as if they were customers. They realize they have to engage suppliers in a similar way in order to sort of onboard them, in order them to get them to participate. They have to appeal to them in a very similar way to the way that they appeal to customers.
Thank you, Darren. The next question we have here is, what about smaller companies? How can I make use of these recommendations?
Jim, do you want to take that?
Smaller companies? Well, in many ways, I think smaller companies have an advantage because there's, you know, with a lot of the large companies that we deal with, they're bound by enormous legacies of information systems and cultural sort of approaches and information silos and sort of organizational silos that makes it very that makes sort of taking advantage of the emerging web a real challenge in terms of breaking down those habits and those silos. You have a lot of companies now, as we get into the questions around, you know, integrating, for instance, my CRM system. Now, for a small company, that might be readily easy to do. But for a large company, in many cases, they're not confident at all that they've got a CRM system that has authoritative data about their customers, so it becomes a very difficult thing to get through. So I think in many ways, part of the advantage too is that a smaller company can likely engage with an up-and-coming a vendor that can provide sort of more for your buck in terms of being able to suit all of these purposes, the strategy and the pervasive and the engaging and the responsive in an easier way. So Darren, maybe you want to take that.
Yeah, I'll add to that. I think Jim's absolutely right. I also think that there are vendors that are starting to weave a lot of these, what used to be siloed applications, and I'll give you an example. Web analytics, you know, Google Analytics or Omniture, WebTrends, any of these guys, you should have to buy that, and then you'd have to weave that into your website. And then you might actually add some community software. Maybe it's a part of your web content management system, maybe it's not. You got to integrate that, and then if you want any kind of, you know, A/B split testing or site website optimization, you got to integrate that. And more vendors like Sitecore are starting to weave all of those into a single unified product that is not requiring integration so much as it's requiring customization or configuration. And that example I showed earlier, that our Web Forms for Marketers tool actually is, you know, out of the box has a CRM connector, so that you can actually create, you know, leads and accounts right in the Microsoft Dynamics, and you can do the same thing with Salesforce with a CRM connector to that. So more and more you're seeing vendors start to create more of this out-of-the-box, no programming required, configure, set up, and you're off and running. So I think in a lot of ways the smaller companies, you know, can actually stand this stuff up pretty quickly.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Darren. The next question we have here is, how important are mobile devices as a channel and for site optimization?
I'll take a stab at that first, and then I'll let Jim add his 2 cents. So web mobile is becoming hugely important again. It's really surprising, actually. For the longest time, we talked about mobile ad nauseum, and really didn't seem like anyone was really terribly interested, because Sitecore has always had a really strong mobile story. In terms of the way we built our product, it just lends itself very well to mobile. However, couldn't get really a lot of customers to be interested in the last 3-4 years. But that has really changed in the last year, I would say. Mobile has become a very hot topic again, and it's actually coming up. More and more customers are asking about it all the time again. And I think it's very important because, one, there's a couple things that have happened. One, the actual mobile technologies have gotten very good. You know, let's probably give credit to Apple where it's due, and the iPhone has really changed the landscape in terms of what one can expect on a mobile device and the browsing experience. But I think on top of that, these smartphones have become so capable, and so you know, you can do so much with them, and now with their embedded GPSs, you can actually know where people are. That it's become one of the most crucial areas. It's actually one of the hottest searched things right now that we see in the market. It is absolutely one of the best places to engage with them. You don't even have to shrink your form factor. In some cases, it's actually a good idea to really think about the use cases that people would want to do mobily. But more and more people are doing everything on the full-blown browser experience. So I'd say it's very important. Jim?
Oh, yeah. There's really... At this stage, and you're right, I think we heard rumblings of this for years, but it's finally coming to fruition. And I can't add much to what you have to say, except for I think that the ideal that we were hoping for some years ago is that we could have one platform that would essentially be readily able to deliver to any device. And there's still a lot of maneuvering around the sort of major players in multiple spaces there, meaning the device manufacturers and the software vendors and the visualization technologies. And you've seen some of those, for instance, the conflicts between Adobe and Apple. Those types of things are going on right now. But the ideal is very much is to get to that point. There's also, it's not just the publish out to these devices. I think Darren also touched upon this, the location awareness is creating whole new different types of applications that couldn't have been really done on it, or that weren't appealing to a person who sat in a stationary position at a desktop, but suddenly they become vital in to differentiate when you've got people in a mobile environment. The other thing is to think about optimization and analytics from this standpoint is going to be a very hot area right now. Is that like, how do we sense and respond to customer demand when it's coming over this other channel now? And can we somehow unify the information that goes across all those things?
You know, another thing that just to add to that, it reminds me of something that I saw. One of our customers is the Boy Scouts of America, and they have a sister organization in Denmark. And this actually starts to fall into the what I'd call reality augmentation, or some of the terms they call, where you have the ability to pull up information on the fly. So as a great example of that is what the Boy Scouts are doing, where you are out on a jamboree and you can take with your phone a picture of someone's 3D barcode. And so all these scouts have these 3D barcodes on their shoulder, and you can friend someone in real world and connect to their network. What we're doing with them is letting them take that picture and then build that social community amongst the Boy Scouts. You know, it's very similar to what Amazon's doing today as well, where you can take a picture of a product in the store and then immediately bring up all the reviews on that product on the Amazon iPhone application. It's very similar. You're starting to see a lot of that as well. So we're really taking advantage of these phones now that have cameras and using that as a search method for pulling up relevant information. Again, it's that proximity idea, and based on where you are, but you also can take all that data back and use that as part of your analytics to understand what customers are doing.
The next question we have here, which I'm sure Darren would like to answer, is what is the value of Sitecore as compared to open source solutions?
Oh, sure, I love that one. So let me start off with the statement that, you know, there's nothing wrong with open source. I think, based on your requirements, you can use open source to be successful. I think, though, you have to understand what you're getting. You know, we've done some fairly exhaustive competitive intelligence around different open source packages, and what we have found is that they are significantly less functional than what you get in a commercial CMS, and that's fine. It's free. Well, it's relatively free. You still have to pay for support and upkeep, but the thing you have to realize is what your requirements are. If you just want to publish some web pages, I think you can, and you have a fairly simple site, you can make open source work for you. That's definitely doable. The minute your requirements change and become more advanced, a lot of the things that Jim is talking about in this session, you can't do that with open source, in my opinion, and I'll let Jim, agree or disagree to that. I think these more advanced concepts, you would be programming so much that eventually you would be crushed under the weight of the code you own. Because at the end of the day, your budget, let's call your WCM budget, or your site interactive management budget, your software cost is less than 5% in most cases, 10 at most, oftentimes less than 5%. Everything else is maintenance and implementation. And with an open source package, you are probably going to double to triple your implementation costs. So your time to market is going to be bigger, and then your maintenance costs are going to be bigger. So, and not to sell too much fear here, I just think that functionally, a lot of these guys don't have workflow. They don't have a lot of the underpinnings it takes to really manage a large modern site, and it certainly doesn't have more of the advanced capabilities that we're talking about on the responsive engagement side, or even in a lot of cases the strategic side. These things are not built for large scale. Even Drupal that is on the whitehouse.gov, has had an enormous amount of work done to it to make it work. It was not trivial at all. Jim, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I concur for the most part. Though if you looked at different, in fact, at Gartner, we're doing a little bit of research into the open source providers of web content management as well as portals, and trying to come up with a framework to even evaluate them, because it's really difficult to evaluate next to a commercial vendor. I think the overall feeling is, there are different products and different capabilities. I do agree with you that they tend to be, if it's going to be content management, it's going to be just content management. In some cases, they might invoke some social networking capability or something like that, but they'll sort of leave off at a point and sort of leaves you with, do you have to build out the additional stuff that you want, or do you have to invest in a third-party vendor? And if you invest in a third-party vendor, do you want to invest in another open-source provider? And linking up one open source provider or another is not a stable way of approaching things, because the other things is that there tends to be, and there's a difference between a commercial open source vendor, which means they guide it and they sell the services around it, versus a completely open source product, which they tend to be sort of volatile in terms of what they offer. So in terms of the code and the developments and things like that, in some cases they're not stable, and that's the as things get strategic, that's the thing I worry about the most, is that lack of stability.
I'd add one more comment to that, and this: they generally, because they're open source, you can change the source code, so there's not quite as much attention made to configuration screens, right? You don't see a lot of the same configurability. They're really, you can make that change. You just got to go into this, application or this code base and go make your changes, because you have full access to it. Oftentimes, they are not nearly as configurable as their commercial counterparts, because they don't have to be. They haven't had to have that level of generalization. They haven't had to have that level of repurposability to them. So you often can, you'll find that you're reaching into code more often, and that just has its impacts. I mean, it's just something to plan for.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I think in general you'd see that most of the open source platforms, the audiences, and I was talking a good deal about a proposition of content management even years ago was that I was going to be able to delegate the content and the content actually creation and the content work to the people who actually own the content experts. And despite that proposition being around for years, it hasn't necessarily been realized at a lot of organizations. And that could be a cultural thing, but in many cases it's also that the accommodations really haven't been usable for a marketing or merchandising audience that's just examples. There might be a number. In my business, for instance, us researchers actually participate in this content process, and it would be nice to have tools that are accessible to us so that we don't have to throw it over a wall at IT or production or somebody. So that still remains an issue. So most of the open source projects I see, they're IT driven and they're IT maintained.
Right. I would argue that this should be moving into the marketing realm. If you look at where Sitecore has gone with our products and wizard-driven interfaces and really marketing-centric, marketing-friendly tools, I think we believe that this should be owned by, particularly the customer-facing stuff should be owned by marketing. Internally, it may perhaps different audiences, but it should be the business owners, not the IT folks.
Time for one more question here. What is the current general marketing budget breakdown percentage between web-based options and traditional marketing activities?
Jim, do you have any data on that?
I don't have any. I don't have any. Not at hand right now. I think that I probably could dig that information up, but I'm sure at Gartner we have something like that. But I couldn't tell you off the top of my head.
I know that there's a recent survey that's just gone out on the B2B side, and it also vastly matters. It differentiates against B2C versus B2B. I did see a recent Forrester survey around B2B breakdowns, and it put the web, in the 30 percentile now and growing heavily. Interestingly, I've seen a lot of analyst reports that just talk about the website as in terms of traffic influencers, the top two influencers for customer engagement at all. our web and email, in the number one and number two spots, in the, I want to say, the 70 percentile and the 65 percentile range in terms of what influences you to do to engage with a customer, a company, and do business with a company. So they are the number one and number one and number two ways to impact and influence visitors. And I can probably give you more detail offline if you want to just shoot me an email at dg@sitecore.net. But there's a lot of good in data, but it depends on if it's B2C or B2B. They do swing a little bit.
All right. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Darren. And thank you all. This is the end of our webinar, and I'd like to remind you that we will be sending a link to this presentation so you can pass it along to colleagues who may want to review it on demand. Jim, Darren, many thanks for this informative and useful session.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.